2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app. This is your local
CBS News special report. The federal government has just released its October jobs report. It shows 150,000 jobs were added last month. That's down from 336,000 jobs in September. The unemployment rate was 3.9%. Some of the areas where job gains occurred were in healthcare, government, and social assistance. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger says the Fed is keeping a close eye on these latest numbers, as well as on wages.
The Federal Reserve is focused on wages because the idea is that wages grow by more than the rate of inflation, but not by so much that consumers are able to start spending freely and push prices higher. A wage gain of 4% annually would be better than the 3.7% consumer price index, allowing families to stay ahead of the curve.
Recapping, jobs were added 150,000 last month. CBS News special report.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
This is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A $100,000 advertising campaign appears to have persuaded Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to set impeachment proceedings in motion against the state's top elections official. Megan Wolf is the target of conspiracy theorists who falsely claim she was part of a plot to rig the 2020 election. Wisconsin Democrats are in campaign mode a year early. They're launching a statewide door-to-door effort in 115 communities starting this weekend. Polls suggest President Biden might not have long coattails in Wisconsin. State Party Chair Ben Wickler says that won't matter.
Voters are casting ballots because of the issues, because of their yearning for freedom, because they want to have the power to make their own decisions about their own bodies, because they want to live in a democracy.
I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. State lawmakers from the Eau Claire area have proposed a package of bills to expand voting access in the state. Three of the bills proposed by Representative Jody Emerson and State Senator Jeff Smith would allow convicted felons to vote once they've served their sentence, count incarcerated people in their home of record for voting districts, and require county sheriffs to establish a plan for eligible voters in their jails. The other would establish harsher penalties for deceiving voters about eligibility or polling information. A proposed bill would make changes to Wisconsin's Amber Alert system following the death of a 5-year-old in Milwaukee. According to a WISN report, State Senator LaTanya Johnson, who personally knew the family of the child, says their family and friends want the system re-examined. Their main concern is why an Amber Alert wasn't issued, as in order to send out an Amber Alert, the Wisconsin Department of Justice needs to have information about the missing child and a suspect or vehicle. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WCFW News.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The Brewers will bring back one of their pitchers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers re-signed right-hander Colin Ray to a new one-year extension worth $4.5 million guaranteed. Meanwhile, the New York Post says that manager Craig Counsell is in New York to interview for the Mets manager's job. NBA, the Bucks are at home to take on the New York Knicks. At 2-2, Milwaukee has great shooting offense, but nobody playing defense. The Bucks' Pat Connaughton asked, how far can this year's team go?
I think the sky's the limit, but I think we'll focus on trying to get better each and every single day. I think the chemistry continues to grow. I think it's had to grow a little bit in the preseason. We showed flashes, but at the same time, we were all trying to get on the same page at certain points of games as well. And I think that's going to take time. It's going to take communication. It's going to take, you know, mental focus as much as it is physical. And so for us and us guys who have been here or veterans in the NBA, to make sure we use our voices to help each other out while we're out there on the floor and take it game by game.
That's the Bucks, Pat Connaughton. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is Civic Media. It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap.
Mostly cloudy for a while this morning, becoming partly cloudy this afternoon. Our high today, 47, with wind north at 5 to 15. Tonight, 25. Tomorrow.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. If anyone knows what's on tap, it's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5, The Tap.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. Very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. We made it to Friday, and we have a very good, interesting conversation, important one to have coming up.
Yeah, we really do, man. The weather's nice, and it's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing fine. I'm excited about what we're going to talk about today and what we're going to be talking about in future shows because, the world's aflame.
You know, Sandy, I would not, think about having a discussion on this level without having you there as well because this clearly is a conversation that needs balance. And it more than anything else, Sandy, it is a conversation that has to be had. Is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just think Americans, we live here in this island, really, where they got the Atlantic and the Pacific separating us by thousands of miles from the realities of the rest of the world. And what we get to read about is what we choose to read about, which doesn't mean we know necessarily very much about what it's like. And I think the important thing for Americans is that we begin to wrap our mind around what it's like to be a resident of other parts of the world and to understand what's going on in those parts of the world.
You know, I don't have to tell you, the impact of what is happening in Israel and in the Gaza between the Israelis and the Palestinians, nothing new. But certainly something that right now is on the verge of exploding into, one a time in history that people will be talking about for centuries. But it's something that certainly has, this discussion has to be had. And because of that, I am really happy to bring on this morning Mr. Malik Atala.
Correct.
And he is an American-born Palestinian who went to universities here in America. He doesn't shy away from his, American birth. And he's a restaurateur in Racine. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you guys for having me.
You called, Sandy and I were in a conversation last week, briefly.
I think it was Tuesday this week, and Malik called, and Malik called, and I think we both thought it would be an interesting and good idea to have Malik and people who are very sympathetic to, but understanding of the situation of their extended families in the Palestinian regions of Israel.
So we're going to be joined shortly by Otman Atta, and he is with the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. He'll be here shortly. But let's begin by, tell us a little bit about your past and your life in America and how you're connected to what's going on in Israel right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. First and foremost, you know, I am a Wisconsinite, born and raised. I was born in St. Luke's on 27th Street. Went to school in the Saddam School for, you know, the majority of my life up until middle school. Then I had the pleasure of going to Oak Creek High School. Got to, you know, do the public school scene. Got to play football. Was first team all conference. Had awards playing football. Got that, you know, football dream.
What were you, a guard?
I was a center.
Center?
Center.
Hey, I was a center too. All right. Yeah.
Well, Sandy, you guys are
long snapper to long snapper.
You guys are built a little different to be playing the same
yeah,
position.
I looked a little
different.
It was a
different time. Okay.
Different times. But also, you know, even just from that, you know, in 2012, we had that, you know, horrific attack on the Sikh temple, which was based off of racism and the desire to kill people that didn't look like you. And this was in 2012. And
so when were you at Oak Creek High School? What vintage?
2010 to 2014 is when I graduated.
Then you went to university?
And then I went to university, correct.
Where, here in Wisconsin?
I went to Concordia for 4 years, and then I went and finished at UW-Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
So a little bit of both.
That's the truly Wisconsinite story, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for people to understand that all of us come from other places. You know, I happen to come from England only a couple of generations ago, but we all come from other places. Your parents are both Palestinian?
Both my parents are Palestinians. Both my grandparents are Palestinians.
Are you first generation American then, or second? Your parents, were they moved here?
My father was born in Brazil, actually.
Uh-huh.
And my mother, she was born in Chicago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I don't know how that would.
Well, no, you're second generation. So, you know, I just want the people to know we're all Americans, and we're all Americans by one, two, three, four generations.
No, 100%. And, you know, going to even just public school for those 4 years, learning about American history from just the public lens, you get a broader picture, essentially, of not just the Palestinian story, but also the American story. And we did learn about American history, but just the, you know, talking about the American Iraq War, the Gulf Wars in the 90s, talking about the Vietnamese War, the Vietnam War, and the Holocaust and all that stuff. It's difficult to not see what's going on today and learning from the past and saying, wow, you know, seeing what's going on with, you know, just the Holocaust, I was atrocious. You know, seeing some of the, and this was back in, you know, the 50s, the 40s, when you didn't have the same types of technology or recordings of what's going on. But you still were able to see it even to this day. And you would say, okay, I'd see these horrific, you know, things that are going on in humanity. You'd be like, oh, I'd want to stand up and speak out against it. And unfortunately, we see some of the same things today, and not just in the Palestinian cause, but with the Uyghur Muslims in China, with, you know, the things that are going on in Africa and Sudan. Quite a bit of atrocities going on around the world. And
well,
we're even more
connect. You can look at the Balkans, what was going on with Bosnia-Herzegovina, you know, with ethnic cleansing, unfortunately, keeps rearing its ugly head around the world. And, you know, we went through 40 years of what was called the Troubles in England with the Irish, the IRA, and the terrorism there, and the people around the world who were of Irish lineage taking sides, you know, seeing it a little more clearly than people now see what's going on in Palestine.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
No, I was going to say is, you know, I'm not extremely familiar with the IRA. However, I am aware that they always have stood with Palestine in their right for freedom and their
well, the IRA is a different, or it's, I'm talking historically, the IRA has more or less been put to sleep in England based on the Troubles and forging some agreements that solved for the Troubles. The world stood by and watched that a long time, and they would have been aghast if the solution to that would have been, for instance, bombing Dublin or some such mass kind of effect. And so I think what we're struck by, Earl and I, in the conversation is the proportionality of what goes on, and to make sure that when we end up with the kinds of problems that result in terrorism, we end up with proportionate responses that don't cause death to too many innocent civilians.
So let's talk a little bit about this. It was the 7th, the 6th?
The 7th.
And you've got loved ones who are still there.
Well, I did have this question because I think as an American, I have trouble wrapping my brain around Hamas, okay? And Hamas seems to be an organization that has been labeled as a terrorist organization, but it has some level of political legitimacy because it was operating as the government of the Gaza, okay, for the last 10 years or so. And so Hamas, however, is not, I mean, the majority of Palestinians who live in Gaza are not members of Hamas, are they?
To be quite honest, I'm not sure, and I don't think so. But I will say that, you know, if you look at the history of Hamas, they were actually formulated as a political group in, I think, the 70s, and they were funded by Israel. They were funded by the West as a counterpart to the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which were more popular back then. And, you know, at some point they defected. They decided, you know, this is the path that we want to take. They have a political organization, and then they have an armed resistance within that political organization. From my perspective, you know, in any kind of government, in any kind of political party, you have the upper echelon, the guys that are making the money, the ones that are making the decisions. They have their own agendas. And I don't want to say that, you know, the leaders, I'm not familiar with them, to be very honest. So I'm not going to go and speak about something that I'm not, you know, extensively, you know, knowledgeable on. But I will say that, you know, one of the biggest things that Hamas has been saying is that, you know, the aggressions today were similar to what happened in 2007, 2008, that happened in 2014. So the ones that are fighting on the ground were the young ones that experienced the same similar atrocities that we're seeing today back in 2014, 2007. So these kinds of attacks from Israel are not unique. They've happened before in the past, these carpet bombings and, you know, mowing the grass, as they say.
But when you talk about the attacks from Israel this time, what precipitated those attacks clearly was the attack from Hamas on innocent citizens of Israel. I mean, we're not comparing what took place then with what took place on October 6th.
And I think it's interesting, Malik, because I think all of us in America have trouble. Everyone outside of a war zone has trouble understanding the actual facts inside the war zone because the information gets so filtered to us by the participants, right? So, you know, we have that same problem with Ukraine and Russia in terms of getting information out of the war zone to understand it. So I appreciate your indicating the fact that it's hard to know firsthand what's going on there. But you do have your relatives. I presume that your family has relatives that remain in either the West Bank or in Gaza?
So me, immediately, I have family in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have acquaintances, friends, close friends that have family in Gaza that have, you know, immediate connections there. The one thing I will say just to there are a lot of people speaking out from Gaza. Outside of the electric shortage, the water shortage, the food shortage that's being, you know, imposed on them, there is a lot of information coming out from the ground level.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of, you know, reporters from either Al Jazeera or even just independent reporters that are there that are, you know, documenting as best as they can all the atrocities that are going on. So we are getting a lot of information. You can go on Twitter. These are just independent reporters. And, you know, everybody has a camera these days. Everybody can record what's going on. They show the aftermath. Sometimes, like even just, you know, a few days ago, they bombed the refugee camp in Jubilee. And, you know, they show that this was a densely crowded population of just kids, women, children. Yeah. And now you see the after effects.
All right, we've got to go to a break. Our guest is Malik Atala. He is a restaurateur in Racine. And it's Friday. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is on board. We'll be right back.
93.5 The Tap.
Whether we're digging a neighbor out of the snow or cooking up a weekend block party, nobody knows our communities better than us. But for the last 12 years, some politicians have carved up our neighborhoods into voting districts that serve their political interests instead of our needs. Now, they want to ram another power-grabbing bill through the legislature so they can control whose vote counts. When it comes to our districts, we draw the line. By joining together in favor of true, fair districting, we can ensure our communities thrive. Call your state senator today to tell them that the legislature should not be allowed to manipulate our district lines, period.
Paid for by the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
The delusions of grandeur have come to an end, as has the campaign of former Vice President Mike Pence.
you know, people didn't care for him so much. I don't know why. You know, January 6th, they just wanted to hang him at the gallows, Dom.
I mean, at least they knew his name. You know, there's no such thing as bad PR, Crudy.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Our second guest has arrived in the studio. He is none other than Oakman Atta. He is with the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I remember you when I was a youngster.
Earl, we're both still young. Okay?
I'm looking at both of you, Earl, and I'm not believing that story.
So anyway, we're here to have a serious discussion on what is going on. And, you know, Oakman, let's talk a little bit about your background and, you know, and where we are.
Sure. So, actually, I was born in Palestine. I was born in the West Bank, and happened. My grandfather used to come here. My father came here. Actually, my father went to West Division High School, even here in Milwaukee. And during the time that we were visiting here, the Israelis had occupied the West Bank. We were declared absent because we were not Jewish. Which means that we weren't able to actually go back. We didn't have the documents that
was,
were given.
Was this in 67?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so basically then I grew up here in the Milwaukee area, and that's where I've stayed. Maybe it's the great weather that we have here.
Man, you've witnessed a lot of unfortunate situations between Israel and the Palestinians. Your thoughts about now?
You know, it's unfortunately this isn't unexpected. As you said, this is not a new issue. I mean, with the occupation originally of the creation of Israel, it happened 75 years ago. In Gaza, most of the people who are in Gaza, 80% of the population are not indigenous to Gaza. They were actually in towns and villages in what is now Israel. And so they were driven out of their towns and villages. There were over 500 that were wiped off the face of the earth. And many of them then lived in this area, and the population continued to grow. Israel was in full control and actually had settlements in Gaza from 1967 until 2005.
Well, until 67, Gaza was actually a part of Egypt, correct?
It wasn't a part of Egypt. It was being administered by Egypt.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, what happened when Israel occupied 78% of Palestine, the 22% that remained included Gaza and the West Bank.
Right.
So West Bank was administered by the Jordanians and Gaza administered by the Egyptians.
And my recollection, I'm not that clear, but my recollection of the beginnings of Israel was that the treaty that was the British of organization sort of started the process, but the British washed their hands of it when the conflict arose between the residents there in the locale between the Palestinians and the Jews of Israel, and they walked away from it, leaving the participants to try and solve it for themselves, which resulted in this partition. Is that correct?
Kind of. So no? So basically what happened is after World War One, the Ottoman Empire was divided between multiple countries. And again, it was part of the colonialist, let's civilize the non-white man, unfortunately. And so the mandate for Palestine was given to the British. And so the British were supposed to allow the people of Palestine independence.
But up to that point, the Ottoman Empire was the country, and all of the parts of the Ottoman Empire were not themselves countries for this 300-year period of the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah, I mean, the Ottoman...
So when it collapsed in 21,
right,
the Mideast was left to sort of reorganize itself.
Well, I don't want to say that it was exactly that way, because the people, even though the Ottoman Empire controlled the area, whether it was Palestine, Lebanon, right, Syria, all of those, actually those countries were created by the Europeans.
Right.
They actually divided up the countries. I mean, Winston Churchill was fond of saying, "I created Jordan with a stroke of a pen." Same thing that they did in Africa, same thing that they did in Asia.
And Iraq, those were arbitrary lines that didn't have anything to do with ethnicities or nationalities.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But what happened, though, is the British actually allowed the influx of Jews from Europe into Palestine. Palestinians originally did not have any objection because there had always been Palestinian Jews that were there, that they lived as neighbors with the Muslim and Christian Palestinians. But these Jews that were coming in, unfortunately, didn't want to live with the Palestinians. They wanted to replace them. And so as time went on, more and more Jews were brought in from different parts of the world. And eventually, Jewish terrorist organizations started to attack the British and the Palestinians. So when you hear about...
And this was in 48.
In the 40s, actually, yeah. In the 40s. So the Irgun, the Stern Gang, right, the Haganah, these were considered by the British and others as terrorist groups, although their leaders became prime ministers of Israel. So just, you know, so we put that in perspective. And eventually the British said, hey, you know, we're going to leave this. So they gave the whole issue to the United Nations. And in 1947, the United Nations decided to partition Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state. The problem is, the majority of the land, 56%, was going to be given to the Jewish state, even though these were not indigenous people. These are people that basically had come in from Europe. They gave them that land against the wishes of the Palestinians. So imagine one government giving the United Nations giving land that belonged to a people to another group of people that were not indigenous to that area.
So we've got to go to a break. And our phone lines are open, as always, at 844-967-2789. My guests are Othman Atta. He is the He's with the Islamic Society of Milwaukee, and Malik Otala, who is a restaurateur in Racine. And, you know, guys, and Sandy Williams, of course, who's with me every Friday. And I guess we can go back and retrace the history of it. And
well, I do think it's useful to get a little bit of the taste, right, of what it is that set the table for what we've got.
Yeah, and then we'll move forward to today. Gotta go. We'll be right back.
Liney Lodge and Carson Park, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown
and all of Wisconsin.
93.5 The Tap. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin could get $229 million from Washington to help pay to keep more than 319,000 children in daycare. It's part of an emergency request the Biden administration is making to Congress after pandemic daycare funding ran out at the end of September. The Wisconsin legislature rejected Governor Evers' special session on child care this fall. After that, Evers released $170 million in emergency funding. The American Cancer Society says millions more people should get screened for lung cancer. The society is expanding recommendations for older adults who used to smoke no matter how long ago they quit. The new recommendations also extend to people with a 20-pack history. That means nearly 5 million more Americans are now recommended to get screened. I'm Terry Bell. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Attacks on all American Family Field events, including Milwaukee Brewers games, has been proposed as a way to get more state senators on board with a $546 million funding plan. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau found attacks on all events could generate between $3 and $6.5 million per year. Both the Milwaukee Brewers organization and the authors of the current proposal called the event tax plan a non-starter. The bill will likely need bipartisan support to pass in the state Senate. The Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services and National Association of Boards of Pharmacy have announced an agreement to speed up the licensing of state pharmacy students. The agreement comes as pharmacies across the country face short staffing concerns and walkouts. The plan will cut out steps of the licensing process and allow students to notify the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy for approval of postgraduate competency testing before sending proof of graduation. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WCFW News.
Matt Flynn Direct.
When it comes to shutting down the government, what I'm afraid is Mike Johnson comes in, he'll say, real smooth, I don't want to shut down the government. Here's a budget. And you'll go, hey, wait a minute. That has cuts in child care, Social Security. And he'll smile. He's sort of like Scott Walker. People who are unnervingly polite behind that kind of facade, they have a lot of inner weasels. They have too many inner weasels.
The Brewers will bring back one of their pitchers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers re-signed right-hander Colin Ray to a new one-year extension worth $4.5 million guaranteed. Meanwhile, the New York Post says that manager Craig Counsell is in New York to interview for the Mets manager's job. NBA, the Bucks are at home to take on the New York Knicks. At 2-2, Milwaukee has great shooting offense, but nobody playing defense. The Bucks' Pat Connaughton asked, how far can this year's team go?
I think the sky's the limit, but I think we'll focus on trying to get better each and every single day. I think the chemistry continues to grow. I think it's had to grow a little bit in the preseason. We showed flashes, but at the same time, we were all trying to get on the same page at certain points of games as well. And I think that's going to take time. It's going to take communication. It's going to take, you know, mental focus as much as it is physical. And so for us and us guys who have been here or veterans in the NBA, to make sure we use our voices to help each other out while we're out there on the floor and take it game by game.
That's the Bucks, Pat Connaughton. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mostly cloudy for a while this morning, becoming partly cloudy this afternoon. Our high today, 47, with wind north at 5 to 15. Tonight, 25. Tomorrow, part.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends.
I've made up my mind to live in
All right, welcome back to a special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm honored to have in studio Mr. Othman Atta. And what is your title at the Islamic Society of Milwaukee?
I'm actually the executive director of the Islamic
Society. Executive director of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. And Malik Atala, who is a restaurateur in Racine, and of course Sandy Williams, who's always with me on Fridays. Sandy, you were asking a question before.
Well, I think Othman was explaining the sort of the origins. My interest was just putting on the table how we got to the present, how, you know, setting the table for what is the situation in Israel and with respect to the Palestinians. And I think Othman was talking about the origins of Israel and the situation after 48, when there began to be terrorist conduct by the Israelis against the British and the occupying forces and the UN at the time. And so they withdrew, kind of leaving the situation to be resolved by the participants, right?
Right. So after, and it was actually before Israel, because there wasn't any Israel before
48.
So these were Jewish military terrorist groups. So eventually what happened, it went to the United Nations. United Nations at that time was dominated by colonial powers mainly. They made a decision to divide the country of Palestine. And afterwards, after that division, until May of 48, when Israel established itself, a lot of massacres of Palestinian towns and villages. Israel eventually occupied more land. And so by the end of the war, 78% of original Palestine was controlled by the country.
And the war you're talking about Israel. Is 67 now.
No, this is 48.
48, okay.
67, they occupied the rest of Palestine, right, which was the West Bank and Gaza. The reason we're bringing this up is this problem has been going on for 75 years. Now, you say, why are refugees in Gaza or Lebanon or Jordan or Syria? Why are there Palestinian refugees there? Well, it's because they have not been allowed to return. According to international law, any refugees that are kicked out of their country or who flee should be allowed to return to their country. Israel doesn't want the Palestinians because they want to maintain a Jewish majority. And that's why we say it's an apartheid state, because they want to maintain a Jewish majority and not allow the original indigenous Palestinians to return. And because the world has done nothing to satisfy the Palestinian needs, to give them their freedom, to give them their own state, that's why you continue to have conflict. And so when you ask, is this surprising? Well, when you cage a people, you don't give them any freedom, you continue to attack them and bomb them and blow up their houses and do all kinds of things daily, for decades, what do you expect? I mean, you could put an animal in a cage and deny an animal its freedom and oppress them. And once that animal can break out, it's going to break out. And again, this is, I think, true of any people who've been occupied or oppressed.
Yeah, but even having said that, what transpired on the 7th or the 6th in some of the things that we've heard, atrocities that occurred, those things cannot be acceptable because many of those Israelis were innocent people, women and children. It's safe to say that. You're not saying that because of the things that have happened in the past that was a pass to do the kind of atrocities that occurred on that date.
Look, as Palestinians, we're the ones, and our civilians have suffered the most from massacres that have been ongoing. We're the last who would ever justify killing of innocent civilians. Now, do I believe that Hamas as a resistance group were able to break in, attack a lot of the military outposts, attack the Israeli soldiers that were occupying them and shooting them and killing them on a daily basis?
Which is apparently something we don't hear about,
right,
that you are saying has been occurring.
So there's a right to that. Killing innocent civilians is not acceptable. However, and this is something that the media unfortunately hasn't talked about, Israel said as soon as they got in and took over the land that they had killed, according to them, according to their news reports, 1,500 Hamas individuals that actually had come into these military outposts and settlements along Gaza. When Israel came in, and according to reports in Haaretz, which is the Israeli newspaper, and others, The Israelis came in with their tanks and Apache helicopters and basically wiped out everything that was there. And according to Jewish individuals who were in the settlements, and I can give you guys those, you know, you could listen to what they were saying, that the Israelis basically mowed down everything. They used the tank shells and others. So just like...
This precipitated the attack.
No.
This is after the attack.
This is after the attack. So what I'm saying is, you know what? When a Palestinian is killed, something happens, like when Shireen Abu Akleh, who's the Palestinian journalist, was killed by an Israeli sniper, it took them 6 months to try to uncover what happened. I want an independent body to discover what actually happened in these settlements. Were most of these people killed by Israeli shelling when they came in to wipe out the Hamas group that actually came in? Or was it something else? Because the stories right now are unknown. However, again, I will say killing of innocent civilians is not acceptable.
On either side.
But why is it that our narrative, when the Palestinians, let's say they killed innocent civilians, we're calling them savages, we're calling them brutal, we're calling them animals. Why is it that when the occupier does that, we don't say that, oh, this is just collateral damage. Oh, this is the price of war. This is part of the indigenous people are always the savages and the occupiers are always the civilized people who are conducting war. Why don't we say what Israel is doing right now, where we see that they're destroying entire populations, the cities are being wiped out and buildings are being brought down with entire people inside of them. Why don't we call that savage and brutal? Why don't we call that state terrorism? Or why are we sanitizing it? Why do we have this double standard? That's the problem that we're having.
So I'm in agreement with you that human beings are human beings.
Absolutely.
And the loss of any life, regardless of whether that's a Palestinian or an Israeli, Sandy, is equal, right?
I guess I keep retreating to something that... can get rid of ethnicity as the differential, like the Troubles in England. And the Troubles in England went on for a long time without disproportionate kinds of responses, but with a long term, and finally ended up being settled, okay? But it was terrorism, and the IRA administered horrible kinds of terrorist activities, which did not, however, result in an extreme disproportionate response by the English in Dublin or elsewhere. So I think that we always have to put on those kind of glasses and say, okay, the world is capable of responding to this kind of situation, and it doesn't necessarily have to result in the kind of massive response. Proportionality, the world always talks about proportionality. The UN talks about proportionality. But we aren't really doing much to police that, and we aren't finding proportionalism, I think, in the current situation.
So, Sandy, where does that come from? Because there's supposedly a United Nations that is supposed to be able to...
Well, the United Nations doesn't have an army.
I know, but the United States does. And
well, but we are not the United Nations army. Unfortunately, ever since the League of Nations failed and then the United Nations started, we've always had this wonderful conceptual operation. But increasingly, America and many other countries have distanced themselves from ever being subjected to any sort of criticism or fault from it. So, you know, the United Nations is actively looking at this and beginning to say, hey, there's disproportion here. There's a problem.
Can I add to that? The problem, unfortunately, is our government. When the United Nations Security Council wanted to call for a ceasefire, which country vetoed it? It was the United States. When the General Assembly met, there was 120 countries, who supported the cessation of this attack on Gaza. There were 44 countries that abstained, and there were 14 so-called countries that actually were against. United States, Israel, and then all of these, if you want to call them countries, Micronesia, Palau, you know, people that countries, supposed countries, the majority of the world is against it. But the problem is the U.S. government has, over the existence of Israel, vetoed more than 30 United Nations Security Council resolutions supporting the rights of Palestinians or human rights. And it's not just the issue of proportionality. I agree with you. But how about collective punishment? You cut off water to 2.3 million people. You cut off food. These are considered under international law, the Geneva Conventions, Fourth Geneva Conventions, war crimes. You cut off medical aid.
Right.
You cut off fuel to hospitals. Today, right before I came here, as I was coming in, the Israelis, there were some Palestinian ambulances were trying to go from one area to the other. The ambulances were attacked by Israel. Okay, these are war crimes. Why doesn't the United States do something about it? We give Israel billions of dollars in aid, and we give them our best weapons. We can control how they use it and what they do.
Well, I think part of it is you hear what Benjamin Netanyahu said about the United States and its involvement in Iraq, Fallujah, and we did some atrocious things that the American people never got to know, got to even realize because it wasn't publicized when we went into Fallujah and basically did kind of similar things that Israel is doing right now.
Well, I mean, the problem is that, Putin will say the same things about America, is that three wrongs don't make a right, and so... I think you've hit on a problem, which is that I think America, the U.S. needs to look at itself objectively and needs to look at the world's facts objectively. And I'm afraid that the political lens through which we look at things filters that from us so that we don't see things clearly. And we, however, see things in a black and white manner that is not reflective of the realities. And so I think it's really important that we talk to you and have this kind of conversation today. And I think that the only bright spot I hear in terms of what's going on is at the end of each one of Blinken's discussions recently, he has talked about how it absolutely is necessary that after this is closed down, that the two-state solution is resolved. But we've kicked that can down the road for four decades of open discussion about the two-state solution and not gotten there.
And it's same old. I heard that after the First Intifada. I heard that after the Second Intifada. I heard that after Oslo. I heard that after Israel's attack on Gaza in 2009. Heard it after Israel's attack on Gaza in 2014. I mean, Palestinians are saying, you know, don't give us any of that garbage. Just like when Blinken or Biden are saying, we want to make sure that Israel conducts this according to the laws of war. Well, you already see they're not conducting it according to the laws of war.
I know, but I mean, our frustration and your anger and frustration, the only problem is we only can deal with the facts in the world and the realities of the world. So the question is, based on those realities, how do we get from here to a better solution? And I think that's the important thing to address because we aren't going to be able to affect today or tomorrow, I'm afraid, what's going on. But we hopefully could open our eyes and begin to create a political environment in the United States which would move in the direction of a solution. Because clearly, the situation in Palestine, in the West Bank, and in Gaza is not tenable. It's not sustainable. And I'm afraid that the violence that ebbs back and forth between those areas is just the symptom of an untenable situation.
So, Sandy, I think it's clear, and when we come back, we're going to have Malik, a young man, I want to ask the question about the fact that on college campuses, there are people in this country who are clearly disagreeing with what has taken place, and they are being basically persecuted by people saying that you got to choose sides in this. We've got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
93.5 The Tap.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guess is Malik Atala. He is a restaurateur tour in Racine in Atman Atta, who is the executive director of Islamic Society of Milwaukee. And, of course, Fridays means Sandy Williams. But I wanted to ask you, Malik, you're still a young man. And so on university campuses across the nation, and Sandy, you're a big First Amendment guy, that people have a right to free speech. And yet in universities across the nation, there are major corporations saying, if you're in these rallies that are arguing about or arguing against what is taking place, and what's happening with Israel and the Palestinians, and you're on the wrong side of this, we're going to make sure you don't get a chance to ever be employed again, or get a major job with major corporations. What are your thoughts as a young man who, you know, was in the universities? And Sandy, I thought universities were a place that we were supposed to be able to have these dialogues.
Well, you know, unfortunately, what you're describing is not government action. It's private action.
I know, but...
And yeah. The First Amendment is protected by the government, not by private. But it certainly is reflective of a loss of the American spirit, where free speech is built into our social fiber. But maybe it's not.
Well, unfortunately, even... in the government level, you see an attempt to kind of silence the Palestinian movement. You see it in the BDS, the boycott, desist, sanction movement. I think in 37 states in the United States, it's illegal to boycott. It's illegal to speak out against Israel, which is almost exactly contrary to the First Amendment.
I'm just not familiar. If in fact that is the language, I'm confident it is violative of the First Amendment. I'm not sure it's been tested, but government action. Clearly, I mean, we've got a problem here in terms of a disproportion in our society, our willingness to hear what it is people have to say on both sides of an issue, and whether it's a First Amendment problem or just plain a defect in our current social setting, but it's a problem.
Well, and I'll even say this, Andy. There was an issue, I believe it was in 2016 in Austin, Texas, with a speech therapist in Austin. I forgot her name, but essentially when she's a government worker in her new contract to renew with the city of Austin, she was asked to sign a non-BDS form stating that she wasn't going to boycott against Israel, and she refused to, and she lost her job. And there was a little bit of uproar, a little bit of, talking in the news about it. But like everything else in this country, it kind of just passes along and then people forget about it. But it's unfortunately that's still occurring to this day, where the BDS, it's illegal in 37 states to boycott Israel.
Well,
and this is just boycotting, commerce,
products
and stuff like that.
Whether all that is constitutional or not needs to be tested. Maybe I missed the fact that it was tested and failed, but I doubt it. But I think the problem on campuses right now is reflective. I mean, I think what the dynamic in the United States involves the society, okay? I mean, what needs to be addressed and talked about, I think, more is to talk to the society to get it straightened out, because we won't straighten out this legal concept, the worrying about what's against the law or not, if we don't straighten out the underlying social setting, which is leading to the problem. So that's what I'm hopeful our discussion today can start the process of.
Which is, Sandy, the main reason why you and I both agree that this is a conversation that needs to be had, because the American people don't know this history that you guys are talking about.
Well, I mean, you know, the fact is that in the 30s, in Jim Crow states, it would have been a big problem for kids on campus to come out in favor of civil rights, right, and the issues. So we had a social/legal problem within our own country on issues like that, and we apparently continue to have the same sort of social/legal issues associated with our ability to discuss these kinds of things, and it seems to get particularly strident when ethnicities or differences in religion are a part of it.
Well,
okay?
So Sandy, you just, you know, I mean, that's it precisely, because at the same time we're talking about this, this is banning books. We don't want the history of the nation to be taught. There's a segment of the American people who are trying to change all of this, and I don't think they're changing it, looking to change it for the better, Sandy. I think they're looking to change it for the worse.
Well, and the there's different slices of the pie for different issues, and the Israeli issue is a very big different slice of the pie, but it addresses the same kind of bias, I'm afraid. But we interrupted you, Malik. I only wanted to get us back in the direction of talking about the societal view of things, because quite frankly, law always follows society.
I guess I want to know, Sandy, more what you mean by the societal changes, because we are a nation of laws. And if a country or a world doesn't have laws, that's where war starts.
Well, that's the problem in our country right now is that our society is moving away from being a country of a nation of laws. We've got political movements that are addressed at essentially attacking the judiciary of our country, attacking the very foundations of law. So yes, indeed, we are a society of laws, and we need to enforce the laws we've got. And to the extent that things are happening in this country that are violative of the First Amendment or other important rights, we need to address them. But I think, similar to the underlying problem in Israel and Palestine, there are situational things, and we better deal with the situations, because the laws are going to be ultimately reflective of the situations.
So what are you calling for? I mean, my feeling as a Palestinian is, if this issue needs to be addressed, it has to be addressed because it's an international issue.
Right.
It has to be addressed according to existing United Nations law, humanitarian law.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying that in the United States, socially, within the United States, we need to get the people of the United States to see this more clearly and to begin to see themselves and ourselves more clearly, so we can start thinking that way. Because right now, we've inoculated ourselves against being objective about the U.S. conduct with respect to its international affairs.
I think some parts of society, I'll tell you, the people in Congress that have called for a ceasefire, believe it or not, every single one of them was a person of color. Okay? Every single one. Why is it that they know and the others don't know? Okay? Or is it that the others just don't care?
Hold a thought. We'll be right back. Got some important information. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
On air, 93.5 FM. Online, thetap.com. And on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. 93.5 The Tap. This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today.
brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.